The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Andreas Einfeldt is a family doctor or GP from Sweden, and he's also the creator of dietdoctor.com, where he simply shows people how to adopt a low-carbohydrate, healthy-fat approach to living and has all the science to back it up. You're going to love it. Look for more information at dietdoctor.com, dietdoctor.com. Andreas, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. And it's been a couple of years since we were face-to-face with each other at a low-carb conference in all of places. It was Colorado, I believe it was, last time we had the chance to chat. How have you been since then?
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I guess it was a year and a half ago in Vail, right, in Colorado?
That's correct, yeah. And you seem to have kept creating this juggernaut called Diet Doctor. And I'd love to be able to step back into time and for you to tell us exactly how this began, because you're a doctor first and foremost, but now you're one of the most read doctors in the entire world through your website, dietdoctor.com. Tell us a little bit about how Andreas came to be the Diet Doctor.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure I'm the most read doctor in the world, though, but And also, I should say that now it's really a team effort. We're a team of 17 people working full time, and 30 people, including freelancers. So it's certainly not just me. But when it started, it actually was just me. So I guess you have to go back to 2002. I got really into reading about low carb and low GI diets. I was a relatively new doctor. Back then, I graduated in 2000. And when I started reading about this, I got a bit obsessed with it because it sort of contradicted everything I've learned in medical school, and yet it made perfect sense. So I was sort of conflicted because we were always taught, that fat was bad and it's all about calories in and calories out and, eat less and move more to lose weight and so on. And then I read these books about hormonal regulation of weight and how carbohydrates and insulin play a predominant role, and it all made perfect sense based on the on the physiology I'd learned. So I got obsessed about finding out, is this BS or is it actually true? And if it's true, that means that 99% of all the doctors and the nurses and the dietitians in the world are treating most of our patients wrong, really. And the more I learned, the more I found out that, probably most people are simply wrong and we're being taught the wrong thing. And that's why what we're doing is not working, because it's not, right? We have a huge obesity epidemic all around the world. Yeah, it's never been this bad and it's getting worse every year. We have a huge diabetes epidemic and really it's being considered an incurable and progressive disease, even though it didn't even sort of hardly exist to this scale before. So clearly we're doing something completely wrong. And yeah, it just made sense. So I kept reading about this, and I kept, you know, bugging my friends and family, and, you know, making them exhausted listening to me about this endlessly. And then I realized that I had to find some other outlet, so I don't. Although, you know, most of my family started eating low carb, and I did treat my patients that way, and they had great, you know, results. People with diabetes, you know, getting normal blood glucose, being able to get off their medications, and you know, losing weight, and normalizing blood pressure, and so on. So, as I was working as a family doctor, it became clear to me that this not only made logical sense, but it actually worked, you know, for people. If they tried it, it worked. If they did it, it worked. But then I thought, you know, I kept reading about this. And in 2007, Gary Taubes, who I'd read a lot from before, he came out with this book called Good Calories, Bad Calories, really big, thick, you know. Have you read it?
I have read it, and I was lucky enough to interview him as well. He's a wonderful man, and hopefully we'll get him on the podcast soon as well. But tell me more.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a fantastic book, although, you know, not everybody can get through it. You have to be somewhat obsessive to do that, perhaps. But I loved it, and it's really sort of made all the pieces fall into place. Now, I'm not saying that everything that's in that book is correct. Perhaps it's not, probably not, but it you know, the general theme of it really made the pieces sort of fall into place for me. And I thought, hey, I should write a book like this about this in Swedish, because there is no book like this. And I should make it a simple book, because, you know, good calories, bad calories is not a simple book to read. So I started doing that. And while I was doing that, I thought, hey, why not start a blog and share some of my thoughts while I do this? It's, you know, it's a bit quicker than writing a book. So yeah, I started a blog in Swedish called Diet Doctor in Swedish then. And it was an interesting time, because low carb diets were getting really popular in Sweden. Well, they were starting, I mean, just in the early days of getting sort of not mainstream yet, but there was a movement sort of people who were interested in this. So I sort of started this blog at the right time. It became, in a year, it became the largest health blog in Sweden. And we had this event that got highly publicized. It was another family doctor in Sweden called Annika Dahlqvist. She had been treating patients with this you know, low carb, high fat diet for a year or two, and then she got a lot of attention. And then a couple of dietitians, actually from my hometown, they notified the National Board of Health and Welfare, and they were afraid that, you know, people are going to die from heart disease or whatever, from eating all that fat, all that butter. And so an investigation was started. It took 2 years, and then they came to their conclusion. And this sort of the highest medical authority in Sweden proclaimed that, hey, this is okay. They actually said they had nothing to criticize her for. That low-carb diets were compatible with the latest science and experience. This ended up, you know, in all the papers and all the TV channels. So that's when low-carb really started getting popular in Sweden. Because, of course, like all around the world, they've been branded as, you know, fad diets that don't work and they're dangerous. But now the highest medical authority in Sweden said that the opposite, really, that they do work. They're scientifically proven to have an effect, and there's no evidence that they are harmful. So that's when it really started to pick up, and you know, my humble little blog got a lot of traffic, and sort of snowballed from there, really. I wrote that book, it became a bestseller, and started getting some income from doing lectures from the book and so on. And then I started hiring people to sort of not have to do everything myself with this little blog, this little tiny company. So I hired my brother, who is fortunately an IT professional, one day a week at first.
Awesome.
And then he's now working full time in the company. He's our CTO. He's fantastic. So I was blessed that way. You know, having someone in my immediate family who could do all the technical stuff, really great. And then you know, my partner handling all kinds of things in the company, and you know, then I started an English blog at dietdoctor.com to translate everything. I hired people to translate, and people to help me out doing videos and recipes, and then it sort of kept snowballing, and now we're up to 30 people with freelancers and 17 people full time. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey. Really, and the goal is really to make low carb simple for people, because it's still not simple, right? Mm. Low carb and keto diets, and there's a need for a place where you can find. Hopefully, we work hard on making it as trustworthy as we can, and making it as simple as we can, and inspiring for people so that they can get started and keep inspired to keep going if they want to do this and if it's right for them.
Well, let's go back, and you mentioned before that it works. So can you explain to the listeners why a low carbohydrate works for the human being in this day and age? Because the proof is in the pudding, and we've seen it, that people are reversing their type 2 diabetes. They're getting off certain medications in some instances, or dramatically reducing certain medications. And this is an N equals one experiment anymore. This is tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people by adopting, as you said, a simple low carbohydrate approach. So can you explain why this works, please?
Sure. First of all, of course, it doesn't work for everything. It works for certain specific things that it's very effective for good reasons against. So for example, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and other diseases associated with a high insulin level in the body. Now, insulin is the body's main fat storing hormone. If you eat carbohydrates, it breaks down into simple sugars in the gut, gets absorbed into the body, and ends up as blood sugar. And then the body produces insulin to tell the cells that there is sugar available. Let's burn sugar and let's store the fat for later. I mean, the body has two sorts of fuel. Basically, it's either sugar from carbohydrates or it's fat. And the problem today is that what we generally eat is a lot of carbohydrates and a lot of, easily digested, quickly digested carbohydrates in white bread or sugar, everything sweet. And also, we have that kind of food available 24/7. It's not like we ever have to be, as like for food. There's food available anywhere, really. So people and also there's this notion that you're supposed to eat many, many times a day. There's even, experts saying that you should eat every third hour, because if you wait too long to eat, somehow you would become super hungry and you will eat too much when you eat, or something equally, I think that's actually stupid. what is stupid is the idea that to lose weight, you're supposed to eat all the time. That is just as dumb as it sounds. But anyway, so the problem in the world and why we have an obesity epidemic, I believe, and many people believe, and why we have a diabetes epidemic is that we have easy 24/7 access to high carb foods. We eat them, and it raises our blood sugars. It raises our levels of this hormone insulin. The insulin is our fat storing hormone. It tells our body to burn the sugar and store fat for later. Problem is that later never comes. Hmm. We soon eat again. So we're constantly storing fat, constantly telling the body to store fat. And that's the very simple reason for the obesity epidemic. We have a hormonal, environment in our bodies telling our bodies to store fat all the time, and that's what happens. You get fat. So how does a low-carb diet work? Well, you do the opposite. you stop eating carbs all the time, you eat very, very little carbs. And what happens then is that the blood sugar levels do not rise. They stabilize at a normal level. And the levels of the fat-storing hormone insulin go way down. And instead of storing fat, we start burning fat. And that's how you lose weight without even being hungry. You make it so that the body gets the hormonal signal to burn the stored body fat. And when that happens, you're no longer hungry. You're just burning your stored fuel for energy, your fat stores, and you lose weight without having to feel hunger, without having to count calories. That's why it works. And obviously for type 2 diabetes is a disease of too much sugar in the blood. Well, where does the sugar come from? It comes from the carbs that we eat. Stop eating the carbs. The problem, best case, is simply solved. You may no longer even need any medications for type 2 diabetes. So that should be obvious, you'd think. But it's a very simple solution, and it works, and it's been proven to work in study after study. And yet people don't want to believe it because it goes against their preconceived ideas about how it should work. And you really have to go to school for many, many years to understand the more complicated explanation about why this shouldn't work, even though it does. It's fascinating, really.
You mentioned when I interviewed you last time that the type 2 diabetics and the information that a lot of doctors are giving their patients in regard to medication or injecting with the insulin is bordering on insane as far as the message. So can you talk about that a little bit more? Because that was one thing that really struck me.
Well, there may be some improvement in that regard. There are more medications and more ideas than this, but it's really quite terrible still in most places. I use the insane word, and I stand by that. I think it is insane what often happens, which is that people end up with type 2 diabetes because of, eating the food that's readily available and recommended for them. And then they go to their doctor, and the doctor puts them on some drugs, maybe metformin, and it doesn't help enough. And then they come back and they get put on insulin injections. It's very common. Now, the problem is that this disease is actually a disease of too much insulin. Too much insulin made them gain the weight. Having high blood sugar levels like they do in type 2 diabetes makes the body produce tons of insulin. So if you measure their insulin in the body, it's actually very high when you get type 2 diabetes, extremely high compared to what's normal. Now, to treat someone who has a disease of too much insulin by injecting even more insulin is insane. It's like, if someone had a disease of too much thyroid hormone, hyperthyroidism, and you would go to the doctor, they would go to the doctor with these symptoms. Hey, I have this, my heart is pounding, I get warm, I feel, stressed. And they measure your hormone levels and see it's too high, and they start treating you with even more. Mm. I mean, that doctor would lose his job. That's insane. You cannot do that. That's going to harm the patient. Well, actually, this is what we do to diabetic patients all the time. So they come in with a disease of too much insulin. That's what started their problem. That's a core part of their problem. And we treat them with even more insulin. So what happens? Well, they gain even more weight, and their diabetes type 2 gets even worse. And that's why we consider this to be a chronic and progressive disease. It's because we're treating it completely wrong. We're giving them, as a treatment, we're giving them more of the actual thing that is causing their disease in the first place, which is making it worse. So yeah, that is insane. And that is harming, millions and millions of people around the world still today. Definitely the correct way to do this would be to find ways to bring the insulin down, bring the need for insulin down. So of course the insulin is high because there is too much sugar floating around in the body. So you can't just take away the insulin, you have to take away the need for it. So what do? You take away the sugar. You start eating a low-carb diet. You start intermittent fasting. You may even start doing some exercising, although that's certainly not as needed. It's just a bonus, but it could be helpful too. So you do all of these things perhaps, and then you may not need medication. You could reverse your disease. You could lose the excess weight. You could be healthy again. You would think that's what people's doctors would say, but usually they don't. Some people do. More people do every day, I'd say. But still, it's not the norm.
My family and I have been using beautiful, high-quality essential oils for the last 20 years to live healthily every single day. Now, if you're passionate about health and are ready to step into leadership, I want to invite you to partner with my team and I to build a beautifully successful doTERRA business. Register at PeteHLC.com/Pete. That's PeteHLC, which stands for the Healthy Living Collective, .com/Pete. So how has it changed in Sweden over the last decade since low carb has been, I guess, promoted and has been very popular? Have you seen a change, or, I mean, in different parts of the world, it's still frowned upon or looked down upon from the medical associations or dietary associations? Has anything changed in Sweden?
To a degree, sure. I mean, it's been extremely popular online, for example. If you look at what kind of diets are popular for losing weight or controlling disease, it's a low carb, high fat diet is by far the most popular one, and it's been, you know, for the last almost a decade now. So it's certainly very popular with a lot of people. There are many doctors treating their patients like this in Sweden, but unfortunately, we are just a part of the whole world, and our experts basically get taught the same things as experts in other countries. And so our official guidelines are more or less identical to wherever you go. For example, the US, there's not much of a difference in that regard. So I really think this is a change that is very hard to push through, mm-hmm. you know, official channels in just one place, because they're all sort of connected. I think it all has to go down together somehow. But I'm still optimistic. I think every year it's getting less controversial to treat people like this. Mm-hmm. It's getting more, you know, more and more accepted. People are saying, yeah, sure, it works. You know, if people can do it, it works. And people are getting less and less worried about negative effects because none are really apparent, you know. So, for example, 10 years ago when these dietitians notified the medical authorities about Dr. Dahlquist doing this with her patients, they were worried that as this ended up in the papers and in the TV and so on, it would lead to a decline in public health. People would get more heart disease. Well, what happened? I mean, now we have a decade of popularity of low-carb, high-fat eating in Sweden. So what happened? Well, the rates of heart disease actually started plummeting even faster than before. Mm-hmm. It hasn't gone up. Awesome. It hasn't even been flat. It's plummeted. You know, it's down to, you know, I haven't the latest numbers in front of me, but like 60% of what it was a decade ago. I mean, it's really been a decade of tremendous progress when it comes to reducing heart disease in Sweden. Even though, you know, we've had a butter shortage and people are eating more butter than ever, you know, or at least, you know, more than in decades. It doesn't make sense. It's just another paradox. And when you look at it, you know, the French paradox, the Swedish paradox, you know, all these paradoxes, there are paradoxes all over the place. And there is no paradox, of course. It's just the theory is wrong. You know, this idea that saturated fat raises cholesterol and thus must cause heart disease. I mean, it's just an old idea from the 50s, 60s. It's wrong. It's been tested time after time. It doesn't work. You know, it's living. It keeps popping up like some sort of zombie, even though it should have been killed a million times. It's just wrong in every way. So it's a little bit frustrating to sometimes keep hearing it, even though I know a lot of experts are realizing that it's simply been a mistake and it's time to let it go. But other people are just, you know, too stuck in that old idea. They've been believers for decades, and they're going to be believers until they die, even though science does not support it.
Well, I have a question for you, because it's a question that is
very, very common these days, especially through my social media and other channels, is so many people have had their gallbladder removed. And the first question they ask is, can you do a low-carb, healthy-fat or high-fat diet without a gallbladder? So can you answer that one for me? And number two, can you give us an idea of why you think that a lot of people are having their gallbladder removed, please?
Sure. So the first question, if people can eat low-carb, healthy-fat or high-fat on a without a gallbladder, I'd say the answer is yes. I've heard a lot of people do that. I'm not aware of any scientific trials, you know, detailing if everybody without a gallbladder can get to do such a diet without issues, or if it's just most people. But to me, it seems like at least most people can do it fine. Perhaps it can take, you know, a few weeks or so to get into it. And the issue that people might have when they're starting out is that they may get some diarrhea, perhaps if they eat large amounts of fat and the body is not, you know, ready to break it down using bile from the gallbladder. But it seems like if they stick with it and they keep doing it for, you know, days or weeks, the body sort of adapts. And even if you don't have a gallbladder, the liver still excretes bile through the bile duct into the intestines. It's just that it has a harder time, you know, excreting as much as quickly as before. So, well, the short answer is yes. And the slightly longer answer is there may be some gastrointestinal issues as they get started. And maybe they should start it a little bit slower, gradually. But after a few weeks or so, it seems like for at least for most people, it's just fine. And it certainly should not be dangerous. So any issues are more of, you know, the discomfort kind. Moving on to the second question, why do people need to get their gallbladder removed? Well, I think my belief is that there is a simple cause for this, and it's the fact that we've been recommended a low-fat diet for decades. Now, bile is excreted from the gallbladder just when people eat fat, because it helps digest and absorb the fat. So if you go on a low-fat diet, there's less of a need for bile from the gallbladder, and it just keeps hanging around there. It's not excreted. So it's keeps standing there in the gallbladder for a long, long time, and that's when stones can form. And that's what the gallbladder disease is about, basically. It's because of stones forming in the gallbladder because of the bile not being used often enough. So this has actually been shown in studies. If you put people on an ultra low fat diet, like a, you know, shakes, ultra low fat shakes for weight loss or something like that, they tend to get gallstones and gallbladder disease in a frighteningly high proportion of cases. So they actually have to add some fat to these, you know, weight loss shakes now, just to make it slightly less of an issue. So it makes perfect sense. And I think that's really the explanation. You need to eat fat regularly to have a healthy gallbladder.
So that takes us into, do you know much about polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS? Because you said at the start of the podcast that a lot of this is to do with insulin. And from my understanding, especially in Australia, we have 500,000 women who have PCOS. And is it linked to insulin resistance?
Oh, very much so. So PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, is quite a common hormonal issue for women, leading to things like obesity, acne, unwanted hair growth, and sort of like male pattern hair growth, and also menstrual irregularities and infertility, which may be the issue that people have the biggest problem with. So it's certainly linked to obesity. It's certainly linked to high insulin levels, just like obesity. And it's really linked to, associated with all these other diseases of high insulin levels. And it's also been shown that if people with PCOS go on a low-carb diet, their symptoms tend to improve and may even disappear, best case. So it really seems like it's only another symptom of metabolic syndrome, meaning, you know, it's insulin resistance, this high insulin levels in the body disorder.
So in your opinion, how many diseases or illnesses are linked to a high carbohydrate or insulin resistant lifestyle?
Oh, there could be quite a few, but I think the ones where we really have the most solid knowledge is obesity, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and PCOS. That would be the sort of slam dunk ones. And then, you know, there are other more hypothetical ones that are interesting, but there's not as much scientific support. But, you know, something like migraine, really interesting that a lot of people who go on a low-carb diet, they usually don't do it because of their migraine. They might do it to lose weight or something. And then they realize that, hey, my migraine is gone. Hmm. Or at least it's, you know, I only have it one-tenth of the times I used to have it. Very, very common experience. So we have diseases such as epilepsy, where it's actually been proven that, you know, a strict low-carb ketogenic diet is a great treatment for a lot of people with epilepsy. I mean, it's used in conventional medicine every day, especially for kids who have a hard time controlling it with medications alone. And it can be really effective. And it's been studied more recently also for adults, maybe even adults who could control it with medication, but they may have side effects of the medications. It may make them feel, you know, slow down their thinking, make them, you know, it has cognitive side effects often, medications for epilepsy. And then, you know, if you go on a low carb diet, some people can make do without their medications. So that's another one, epilepsy. And, you know, there are several more that could have a connection, but I think these are the main ones.
So let's talk about yourself, Andreas, and some of your most important, I guess, ingredients for a happy and successful recipe for life. So obviously you've got the diet down very well. So what else do you recommend or would you consider for the listeners to explore in their day-to-day lives?
I'm not sure I'm the right person to ask about how to get a happy life. It's not really my expertise, but the way I see it, you know, happiness to me is sort of, it's about progress towards whatever goals you may have. If you feel that, you know, things are going in the right direction, you're making progress, things are improving, then you will be happy. At least that's true for me and for many other people. So I guess it depends on what goals you have and then making sure that you progress towards them. Certainly for me, I mean, I do have a family, I have two daughters, so it's important for me to have a good life with them. Certainly also, you know, the other big thing in my life is this company, Diet Doctor, and you know, making a contribution, feeling that I'm doing my duty, my part in, you know, this helping to save the world thing. It's really what it's about for me. And progress there makes me happy too. And, you know, like a happy family life, there's no really any end point. There's always more to be done, right? And then there is this opportunity for perpetual happiness if you continually progress. Of course, some days you do not, and it's not so great, but still there's that. And also I guess the basic ingredient for happiness is to be grateful for what you have. Be happy with the little things as well.
Well, that's beautiful, mate. And I can only thank you and be grateful that you've given us a glimpse into the world of the Diet Doctor and the low carb, healthy fat movement, especially all the way from Sweden for our listeners here in Australia and other parts of the world. I know you're a very busy man and you are changing so many people's lives. I think you have 200,000 visitors to your website, dietdoctor.com, each and every single day. So keep doing what you're doing, brother, because you definitely are enriching so many people's lives. And just want to say we love you and keep shining brightly, and we hope to get you back onto the podcast one day in the future. Thank you so much, Andreas.
Thank you.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.